drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. In 2019, the World Surfing League matched the prize money between the men's and the women's competitions. But women have been competing for decades on the same beaches, same boards, same sport. So how did we go from there to here, and why did it take so long? Pauline Menza was the world champion in 1993 and is in the Australian Surfing Hall of Fame. She's one of the women featured in the new documentary Girls Can't Surf, and she's my guest in the drawing room. Pauline, welcome.
Thank you.
When did you first pick up a board?
I started when I was about 14, and I started on half a surfboard because my brother broke his Coolite in half, and then I started on his bottom half of his board.
So what was the path from there?
So then I started to go in amateur events probably only after I was surfing for a year, and I loved it, loved getting all these like free things that you win, and I was like, oh, yeah, I want to keep doing this.
What did you know about the pro tour before you became part of it?
I actually didn't know anything, and I had these dreams of the way I thought it was. And, you know, I didn't really like the way the amateur events were because I thought they weren't run very professionally. And I thought, oh, when I get on the professional tour, it'll be a lot more professional. And then when I got on it, I had quite a shock come to me after seeing what happens.
So you had these dreams. Was it anything like you expected?
Half of it was and half of it wasn't. So, you know, the dream of being a professional surfer and travelling around the world and going to these amazing places was great, but then when it came to being sponsored and being able to afford to get to place and actually being thrown out in the crappy conditions instead of good surf made me realise, wow, it's nothing like what I expected. What? I didn't think that I would have to fight for everything that should have been just like a normal thing for the women, just like normal equality. I just didn't think that I'd have to fight for that.
So what sort of things were different? I mean, obviously pay, but beyond pay, what was different to the way that the men were being treated?
Basically, it was like the men were these amazing superstars and the women were just like a freak show on the side. That's how they made us feel. And, you know, things that would happen would be like, for instance, in America, they put the men on, and then when the women are on, they like put a beauty pageant on with a swimsuit pageant right when the women's heats are on. And so they started to create this atmosphere of like when the women are on, that's when we'll have a side attraction so no one wants to watch it.
You were given the bad waves. They even swapped the schedule to make sure the men got the better waves if the conditions changed, which I just think's just, wow, extraordinary as a thing to do. Did that feed into the idea that women weren't as good as men?
Oh, absolutely. And they used to say all the time, like, oh, you know, the women won't be bigger because there's not enough women. And it was just always them holding us back. Like, more women would have surfed if there was more positions. And yeah, they're just always treating us like, it was like the attitude completely, not just in surfing, but with a lot of people, a lot of men back in the 80s, it was always, you know, women were just second-class citizens, really.
And did you talk about it among the women?
We did. We talked about it a lot. And then it just started to get worse and worse. And it seemed like the more we pushed for just having what we believe was just equality, the more they thought that we were trying to take over. It was like, no, we're not trying to take over. We're just trying to get what's fair and right. And so because we didn't feel like we were getting heard and we didn't want anyone to get picked on just one person individually, we decided to have meetings. And in those meetings, we picked out a representative, and then that representative would go forward with ideas of what we had to help push the sport forward. And at the time, Rachel Ballard was doing that, and, you know, was saying, oh, you know, could you ask this and can you ask that? And she said she was coming back, the guys are just getting angrier, and like then we started getting thrown out in even worse conditions. And it was like, we're not trying to take your money or take over. We just actually want to be fair. And so it was a really hard struggle at that time.
So you needed to have, I suppose, a certain kind of solidarity between you, even though you're actually, you know, meant to be competing against each other.
Yeah, and that was hard because we did clash quite a lot with different personalities, but we really did have to try and swallow our personalities and go to the meeting, you know, with one agenda, and that's just to improve women's surfing.
What was the tour like away from the waves? Were you travelling together?
Some people were, some weren't. Like in the beginning of my first few years, I travelled with lots of the girls because it was just really cheap way to do it. And I still travelled. I actually travelled a lot with Jodie Cooper. But, yeah, even still after when I finished or near the end when I finished, the qualifying girls were still travelling together to save money.
Touring the world is a tough task and tough ask when you're not actually making much money. So how did you manage? You were able to do some buying and selling. How did you get through it?
Well, basically I came from a very poor family and my mum really taught us well how to survive. And the way I started my whole career, including my amateur events, is I used to do things like collect cans at Bondi Beach, and when they have street cleanup in Sydney, you know, everyone would throw out all this amazing stuff and we would collect it all and have garage sales. And so from that, I learned on tour to keep doing that. And I would go to, like, when I was in America, I'd buy a whole lot of, you know, 50 pairs of Levi jeans and sell them in France. And same with bikes, stickers, just anything I could get my hands on. And then when I was in the contest area, I would get as many, you know, if they had T-shirts or hats or drinks or anything like that, I'd grab as much as I can because I'd stay with families in each place I went to, which I had to stay with families because I couldn't afford to stay in hotels. And then to thank them, I would just give them those things that I'd got from the contest area.
So you're a top-level athlete on a top tour and you couldn't afford hotels and you were selling
pairs of jeans. No, I couldn't afford jeans. Barely anything. Yep. And when I was in America, I had $100 left to my name and I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to have to quit the tour and go home now. And lucky enough, I won enough to go to Europe. And that happened to me a lot. So even though it's a horrible thing, like my mum always taught me, there's a positive in every negative. And the positiveness out of all of this is I would never have won as much as I did. You know, I had to win to keep going.
Yep.
And I don't think I probably would have won that much. So I know it's a horrible thing to not be able to afford it, but, you know, it made me one of the most winningest surfers in history.
So you think it kind of, in a weird kind of way, as you know, we respond to adversity, all of that pressure kind of pushed you?
Yeah, it definitely pushed me, but it also, you know, puts a little bit of a positive side on a horrible thing, I suppose.
Yeah. On RN, I'm Patricia Karvelas. Pauline Menzer is with me in the drawing room and we're talking about her career as a professional surfer and the new film Girls Can't Surf. So take me into your world championship year. You didn't just win that year. You were totally dominant. What was it like out on the waves? Did that year feel different?
So the beginning of the year I was on a roll. Like I just kept winning event after event. And then I just felt like I had good equipment. I was happy, I was in love, and, you know, everything was going right. And then I was getting a lot of media and I felt just a bit of pressure. And then I got actually a bit ill in Japan. And then after that, my arthritis came back with a vengeance. So here I am left with still a major event in Hawaii and I can barely do anything, let alone surf. So the months before I was trying to prepare. And my coach didn't tell me this till many years later, but under his, you know, talking to himself, he thought, there's no way she's going to Hawaii to compete. She can barely move anything, let alone surf Hawaii. And then the months passed and I still wasn't getting better. So I flew to Hawaii early, hoping that, you know, I might miraculously get better there, and I didn't. Went to the doctors and the doctor gave me a shot of cortisone in my leg, but she didn't get in the right spot, so I wasn't any better. And then I flew to Kauai to see this guy who's supposed to do this amazing treatment, and he probably made me about 20% better, which was great, but but I was still, you know, 80% from good. I was so bad that I had to get my girlfriend at the time to push me around in a shopping trolley because I could barely walk. My training was just putting my leg rope around the swimming pool pole and just paddling in the pool. And then I was trying to eat as healthy as I could. And so that was my training. I wasn't getting in the water at all because of the way I was walking and moving. And then the contest came along and I was walking to, like, hobbling to the water's edge, paddle out. As soon as the heat went, I surfed my heat like there was nothing wrong. It's that adrenaline and the will to want to live. I mean, sorry, to win.
And live. Just live your best life.
Yeah, and live, because it was big. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just got me through, and I did what I had to do enough to win. So, yeah, it was a real, you know, like, kind of people feel celebrated to win the world title with everyone there, but I just felt like I won the journey over my arthritis. And just to actually win and deal with all that and still make it was my own really, real big personal challenge.
And you'd had arthritis since you were young. That must have added another complexity to the whole thing, to training, to travelling, to competing. Was it always a big thing?
Always. I actually never let on to people just how bad it was. I didn't surf anywhere near as much as everyone. I didn't train. Because when you're in agony, you just can't do all those things. So I learned just to pretty much cruise, like, yeah, just do gentle things and swim and stuff like that. And people would say, oh, are you going to train before you heat? And I'm like, oh, nah, I'll be right. But really it was because I was too sore and I'd just only surf my heat just to save my energy. So, yeah, I was constantly battling with it. I'd get up really early in the mornings and get to the contest area as early as possible and organise with the local masseuse to meet me there so I could just be loose enough to surf the heat.
What happened when you became world champion? I mean, that's the ultimate prize, right? You've made it, you're a legend. But that was the year that there was no prize money, right?
Yeah, so I didn't win. There was no bonus at the end of the year like they get now. And so there's no bonus, and then I hadn't had sponsors all year, and I thought, oh, now that I've won, they're going to come running for me. I'm going to get a sponsor easy. And then that didn't happen. I was just blown away. So I ended up going to America to see if I could get something there. And I went to a trade show, and basically half the people there didn't even know who I was, or they just wanted to give me just like clothes, you know. And I'm like, I can't live on clothes. I need financial support. And so I was really bummed. And then I was lucky Barton Lynch ended up saying to Piping Hot, I think it was maybe halfway through the next year, that they should sponsor me because I don't have a sponsor. And so that was meant to be a three-year contract, but I only got paid out the 1 year out of it. Anyway, it just made me realise I just need to look after myself. And so, oh, actually, before I got the Piping Hot, I did a raffle. And so I was lucky enough, the local community here in Byron Bay, they all put in prizes. So I had about 300 prizes, and I earned enough money to go to the beginning part of the tour.
Did you have any sense of why the sponsors didn't come running? Because you're right, you'd expect they'd want the world champ. I mean, I would. I'd be like, hey, you know, let's get into this.
I believe it's two reasons. One, because within the industry they knew that I was gay. And the other reason is I didn't have the look that they wanted. And they told that to my coach. They said that they're not saying it on paper, not officially, but that's what they told him, that I don't have the look. And then that's what really made me realise I'm not going to even bother to keep looking anymore. I'll just take care of myself.
Well, let's talk about that homophobia that you just referred to, which the film deals with. How intense was that level of homophobia?
Oh, it was really bad. You know, I stayed in the closet because I watched how many people would say so many nasty things about Jody. And then I also was worried, like, you know, in the 80s there was people getting murdered for being gay, and one of those people was a family that just lived, you know, 10 houses up the road from us. And so that kind of stuff, I mean, I didn't find out that till later, but that kind of stuff was still happening. And then another girl surfer ended up getting, she was holding a girlfriend's hand walking down the street, and she got kicked and punched and did damage to her lungs or something, I think it was. And, you know, and I thought, oh, God, all she was doing was walking down the street. And I just decided from all those things, especially with Jody getting paid out, to keep it quiet and not let people know. Like within the industry they knew, sorry, but not let it be known publicly. Because I thought if it's known publicly, if there's any ever a sponsor outside the surfing industry, I'd never get it if I came out.
Mm.
So that's why I kept quiet too. It's just for my own
survival.
Hopefully for my own income, yeah. Mm.
What did that do to you though, to have to keep that part of your life secret? You had your girlfriend with you on tour, but as your coach, right?
Yeah, she was supposedly my coach. It was really hard because I'm a really honest person and I always believe in doing, just sticking up for yourself, doing what you believe in. But that came from more of a fear. So, and it was just horrible to not be yourself. And even, it's only about 4 years ago that I have been able to just outright say it, because I hid it for so long. I felt guilty that I was lying to people for so long that I still had trouble to tell people.
Mm.
And so, you know, I think that also played a part in probably my arthritis being bad, because you're not being true to yourself, you know. And they do say arthritis is an emotional disease. So if you get upset or stressed out, it can trigger it.
Mm. Yeah, the way you feel, your mental health has, of course, consequences for your physical health too.
Yeah.
And do you think the sport has changed? Is that homophobia still part of the industry?
I'm sure it's still there. It's probably changed. On what I've seen, it's changed a bit, but I'm still sure. Like, I watch some of the WSL sites and see some of the comments that some of the men write there, and I go, oh, my God, there still is some hillbillies out there. I just really hope that a lot of people that have that old attitude go and see this movie.
Why is, you know, watching this movie so important to changing that
worldview? I think it's important because just they can see what the person, like our personal stories, and just see how we lived and, you know, the journey we have, whereas they just don't see it all. I mean, I guess there always will be keyboard warriors, but the more education we can do for people, the better. And the other thing about it is guys, girls and kids, like so many people, feel really inspired after watching it. So I'm really hoping that even those stubborn people, maybe they'll think differently after watching it.
And what was it like being part of the movie yourself, given, you know, you really had to reflect on what were some very difficult times?
You know what? It was really easy with Christopher Newlis. He's an amazing man. He's gentle, caring, kind. I talked to him a lot before I actually did the shoot. I spent hours talking to him on the phone. And so I felt like I really knew him before they did the studio shooting. And we were in there a long time. We're probably all in there 6 hours each. So they did have a lot of footage. But, yeah, I just found it really easy to talk to him.
The World Tour finally matched the prize pool for men and women in 2019, which is, you know, like 2 years ago. It's very recent. What did you think when that happened?
I was bawling my eyes out. I was so, so, so happy because if you talk to any of the girls, most of us didn't think it was going to happen in our lifetime. And to hear that, and then even when the first contest was won, I just couldn't stop crying with that as well. I'm like, oh, my God, like, can you imagine? I was on tour for 20 years and I earned 300 and something thousand, and now you can win it in three events.
It's just absolutely incredible.
People have recently raised money to make up for the prize that you should have won when you became world champ. That must feel pretty amazing, or like a moment of acknowledgement.
Yeah. Like when I was talking to Mimi, Sophie and Brooke, they're the ones that had the idea of doing the GoFundMe, I was just really, really, really happy that people were wanting to do something. And I was like, wow, I can't believe it. Like, you know, it's been so long since I finished. And then it went up for about 4 or 5 days and it went up to 3,000. I'm like, yeah, it's not too bad. And then by the weekend, it just went absolutely crazy. It was going up $1,000 an hour. And then I started getting like message after message after message of people saying, you know, you inspired me with your career, or just like lots of stories of people I've crossed through my life.
Mm.
And I realized like all those people that supported me back then, they didn't have a platform to help you like they do now. So there's a lot of people that have followed me and the surfing community and many other people come together and give. And, you know, I talked to the girls and they said, what do you think's a fair amount of money? What would you like it to be? And I said, I'd be happy to get the, you know, not winning money at the end of 93. And I said, you couldn't really pay me enough to all those years I missed out on having sponsorship. But I kind of believe in giving and like making the world go round. So I'm like, if there's any extra, I would love it to be donated. So I decided there's a couple of things that I believe in, like the Disabled Surfing is an awesome program. There's also a family in the Philippines that I currently have another illness called pemphigus vulgaris, and it's an autoimmune disease, and it basically you're getting burnt alive, like your skin falls off and it feels like you're getting burnt alive, and they don't heal, the sores don't heal. And I've had that for 2 years, and I met a guy in the Philippines who suffers the same illness, and he doesn't have money for medicine. And so that broke my heart that, you know, I helped them a few times with money, but it just broke my heart that there's so much suffering in the world. And so, yeah, I just thought it's nice to give back.
Do you still surf?
You know, it's only this week I've started getting back out there, and it feels amazing. When you're not able to go and then all of a sudden you can go, it's like makes you just really appreciate the little things in life.
Is that where you feel the most free on a wave?
No, I absolutely love gardening too.
I love that.
I'm sitting here pulling weeds as I'm talking to you.
Well, that is quite cathartic. And there's nothing like pulling a weed.
No, it's just funny that I've learned to adjust. So, like, because I couldn't surf, I've taken on something else that's been a passion. So that's actually, I want to leave on that note and say to people, doesn't matter if you've got a disability, find something you can do, because if you keep looking, there is something you can do, and do your best.
Pauline, it's been so lovely to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Pauline Menzer has been my guest in the Drawing Room, and Girls Can't Surf is in cinemas from Thursday, the 11th of March.